Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And now, for our more grateful podcast. Welcome, listener. You have come of your own free will to the appointed place. Ross, James, and their companions have ventured beyond the Sceptred Isle to find the hidden, the wicked, and the truly horrific. The film is over. The review begins. It is time to keep your appointment with the General Rich Folk in Hell.
So, ladies and gentlemen, goblins and ghouls, welcome to the fourth episode of General Witchfinder's spin-off podcast, Folk in Hell. I'm James in Bournemouth in Southern England.
I'm Ross in Dorchester, also in Southern England. Today we are joined by no one, because we couldn't get anyone to watch Possum with us, but you're just going to have to...
And that's fine, that's all right. It's just you and me, so it's going to be a little bit more intimate tonight.
It's like old times, like probably... One person who listens to this may remember that James and I used to have a podcast back in... When did we start it, James? Remember that?
Oh, my God. Well, basically... Hang on.
My late 20s.
Yeah. You'd got back from Australia.
Yeah.
I was not teaching at that point. Or I was about to maybe... So I'm going to say 27. So I'm going to say 2007, 2005. I'm going to say 2004, 2005 we started it.
Yeah.
That so feels about right.
From between 2004 and roughly 2014, James and I had our own podcast, which we talked about general stuff. I've listened to recently and they ramble on.
They're dreadful. As I often
make me
as
laugh.
I often say to people, they're dreadful. They're awful.
Yeah. However, people used to listen to it.
But that's before we were too far ahead of the curve. Like our thing of saying, right, okay, when we used to do them more regularly, we'd say, okay, so what's the news? Oh, that's the Week in Geek. Yeah. And then I noticed a few years later, I was like, the bloody Guardian about that.
Oh.
The Guardian for a while called their car. I was like, oh, man, we were just so far ahead of that curve.
Well, I think...
But anyway...
We had 10 times as many listeners to that as we had to this.
people had fewer distractions back then in the heady times of the mid-noughties. You know, Netflix...
Not every comedian on the planet had several podcasts.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, there was such, less choice. And I think it was just, kind of novelty, wasn't it, for people to listen in. Anyway, so yeah. In many ways, this is a bit of a Creeping with Armstrong flashback. Don't let that put you off.
No. For this episode, we watched Possum, not the Dame Edna Everidge story.
Hello, Possum.
Mother, father, what's afoot? Only possum black as soot. Mother, father, where to tread? Far from Possum and his head. Here's a bag, Now, what's inside? Does he seek or does he hide? Can you spy him deep within? Little possum, black as sin.
Police are widening their search for missing teenager Michael Browning, who disappeared on his way home from school.
Happened before, I recall. Your school, wasn't it? There, there, lad. I have no idea. Did you find him? Up, is it? Wants to get out.
Possum is a 2018 British psychological horror film written and directed by Matthew Holness, who is better known for being the brilliant Garth Marenghi from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. This is his feature film directorial debut, starring Sean Harris and Alan Armstrong, who is, as Ross has noted out here, known for his appearance in the movie Krull, right? It centers on a disgraced children's puppeteer who returns to his childhood home and is forced to confront the abuse and trauma he suffered there.
I'm just going
to
pause here before we continue. Okay. I just say I haven't gone too far into my research on this because I didn't get any of that. That line discussion about what this is about, I didn't get that from this film at all.
Alan Armstrong says to him, "Oh, you know, I heard about what happened with you. You know, disgusting, disgraceful. They said it was really traumatic or something like it was traumatic for everybody watching."
Yeah. So,
or someone like that.
So
that is it.
We'll come to that. So, I'm just basically to say, I stopped reading any plot synopsis because it was like, well, that's not the film I fucking watched. So,
interesting.
But we will carry on now.
Sorry, intriguing. Right. Okay. And this Possum is an adaptation of Holness's short story of the same name, published in the horror anthology The New Uncanny: Tales of Unease, and partially inspired by the theories on the uncanny by Sigmund Freud. Holness forgot about the idea of adapting the story until he'd begun working on developing a possible horror film. As a fan of the horror genre, Holness stated that he much preferred horror films that resonated with the audience and forced them to reflect on the experience afterwards. Possum's visual style was inspired by public information films Holness saw in his youth. Other inspirations include Dead of Night, covered by us in the original amazing, every episode cover of General Witchfinders, George Romero's Martin, and German Expressionist films. Filming began in Norfolk, with additional filming taking place in Great Yarmouth and Suffolk, so the east of England for any of our listeners abroad. The film's score was composed amazingly, I'm saying, by sound effects and experimental electronic music studio, the legendary Radiophonic Workshop, formerly the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, and featured unreleased material by the studio's original member, Delia Derbyshire, she of Doctor Who theme tune fame. I can't believe Ross has not put that in there.
People listen to this.
Everyone knows. Right. So this marked their first soundtrack purposely constructed for a feature film. In addition to garnering multiple awards and nominations, it was generally praised by critics for Harris's performance, the film's atmosphere, score, and unsettling imagery, though the story prompted several negative reviews. So, there we have it.
So, James,
nice. Good summary, mate.
Thank you, thank you, the editors of Wikipedia.
Yeah, that. Great. Good job, yeah.
So, this is your choice, James. So,
yes, it was.
How were you aware of this film?
Right. Well, the reason why I wanted to do this, and I wanted to cover this for a while, is that I'm a massive fan. I really, really like Matthew Holness. If you're, if you haven't seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, watch Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. It was brilliant. And for me, you know, one of the funniest things that Channel 4 did for a while. and was made with such an obvious love of not only poor quality TV from the 1980s, but also of horror as a genre, and tying it all back to the Mothership podcast, of, you know, one of our first ones, The Rats, and sort of like the work of James Herbert, that overly gory kind of story. And as is always the best way, you know, with scent, with things, when you're, you know, when you're doing a pastiche, you know, the best and the most effective ones are always done by people who totally understand not only the genre, but, you know, what are, you know, what's the mechanics of these things? Mm-hmm. So when I heard that he was doing a horror film, an actual proper horror film, I was really, really intrigued by that. And I read an interview with him, which I thought sounded very, very interesting, when he talked about, you know, how he came to be working on this. But as we may have mentioned before, Poole and Bournemouth down here is an absolute cinema cultural wasteland. It's dreadful. There's no real proper art house cinema beyond the one in our actual art center, and when they show things, it's always at the weirdest times. So this kind of came out in that era, kind of pre-pandemic and before everything started going, especially independent films started going onto streaming as a matter of course. So it was really hard to find or really hard to see. So I just had in the back of my mind for ages, I really want to see this film. And then when I saw, again, I think I was on holiday at some point, and I saw that it was that Amazon Prime had acquired it, and it was on Amazon Prime. And I thought, oh my God, that's, given what I know of it, and given that it has does have some folk themes to it, and it most definitely does.
Yes.
We'll be talking about that in a second. I thought, oh, perfect. So I thought, I'll keep the powder dry and not watch it until Ross forced me to pick a film.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there we are.
I love the way all my friends tell me I force them to do it. All of my things. Projects. Ross forced me to do this.
Me to do this, yeah. Correct. And I will say, there's only one thing. I love Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. There's only one thing that to this day irks me, right? Is when you see any kind of anything for it, or if anyone does like a little compilation of clips from it on a thing like that, they always show you Richard Iowardi saying, I said to Garth, I think this has got the potential to be the biggest television event since Quantum Leap, right? Now, he's the same age as us, Ross.
Yeah.
What year did Quantum Leap come out?
I don't know.
Like 1989, 1990, wasn't it? And this is a sitcom that's all set in the mid-80s. I was like, come on, Richard Iowardi.
Yeah, yeah,
if it was a kid today doing it, I'd go, oh, well, that's all right. You know, you're not to remember that. He's the same age as us, Iowardi.
I forgot it was set in the past,
And it's the only thing that every time I watch it, I'm like, he should have said something like Airwolf.
Yes.
Airwolf would have been funnier. But anyway, that's just my slight side eye at Richard Iowardi. I'll let him off. Because the rest of it's so good. But anyway, sorry, I've got that off my chest. We can carry on now.
I've started watching Dark Place several times, and I've probably only got about four episodes in each time, and then I sort of, it's only about eight episodes long.
Six episodes.
I've practically watched it all then, haven't I?
Yeah. Have you seen the Scotch Mist? That's one of the later ones. Like they get terrorised by a Scottish mist, which features bagpipe players and things like that.
Fog-esque, is it?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, we've got to finish the Fog. I can't believe I read like 95% of the Fog, and then we decided not to cover it.
Lordy. And I also, we will get onto Possum in a minute, people, don't worry. I also found The School, which I think James Herbert uses, because it's, you know, he mentions Andover, which is where my partner Kirsty is from, and there is a private school in Andover. And I was like, how many private schools in Andover is there? And she went, well, I think it's just this one. And I was like, oh my God, this has got to be the place. This has got to be the place. So we had all sorts of information ready to go on it.
When we read the Rats, I was a little bit surprised how much John and James hated it. But when they
and when they
talked through it and made me realise how inappropriate it was, I was like, yeah, you're right. However, reading The Fog, I got to say, I had to put that down at one point and say,
wow,
how on earth did this ever get printed? You know, there were some, actually, you know, I've got quite a dirty, weird imagination.
No.
And some of the stuff in The Fog, it was like, where did this come from, man? Anyway, that's the fog, and one day we might end up doing the fog. But Possum, okay.
Yes,
I thought it started off looking amazing.
Yes,
I just love the look of it. I love that 70s, early 80s.
Yep.
Feel of it. The titles are brilliant, and
yes,
made me want to go away and make some titles on that. It looked very much like, is it Scarfolk, that kind of?
Yes. Like, yeah. But as we've said in the introduction, very much kind of children's, not children's information, public information films, things like sort of Ring of Dark Water. It immediately had that vibe.
The colours
and also yeah. So that opening credit sequence was fantastic, and as we said, the soundtrack, fantastically amazing, yeah. Unsettling.
It's brilliant
as well. It was worth watching it for the soundtrack.
Yeah, and I can't believe that's, you know, that's the only film score. I think the Radiophonic Workshop, as it exists now, are people who worked on it in the BBC. So there are some Doctor Who composers and stuff in there. But it's amazing. It sounds really good. And I'm really excited to find out that it was released on like a special edition vinyl. So I'm going to get that.
Now, come on, Halloween's coming up, Ross. Mm. That could be one for the Cleaver
family. The Halloween party, yep.
Vibes, yeah.
But I've got to say that I found it... It's always hard to sort of criticise them. I find it hard to criticise them because I know it would be really... It's really hard to make a film. It's really hard to do anything. I just felt it just a little bit... amateurish in its just the way it was trying to put so I felt like it was the whole idea of that there's something in someone's past and they're haunted by it and
they're constantly trying to get away from it.
That just felt very amateurish. I felt like at the beginning it was quite effective because I should say, I don't think we're going to go for this blow by blow like we normally
do because
the film is it's very thin.
Okay, well, what I would say is it's very light on dialogue.
Yeah.
If you think about it, Ross was saying before we started recording here, he was like, I didn't even realise that bit happened.
Yeah.
And or what have you. And I was like, well, you know, it was kind of like one line of dialogue.
And I would say the dialogue was so hard to understand. I had subtitles on.
Okay.
And I hate putting subtitles on because I always read it faster than they say it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the accents or, and also they did a thing, and it made me think a bit of like David Lynch, where there's a mixture of lines which mean something potentially about the plot, but other lines which are just like red herrings or just like things for like a mood.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was good.
But yeah, essentially. Starts off a guy on a train, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Pedophilic sort of feelings.
Vibe.
Yeah.
Well, guy, there is... And I know we said we're not going to go through this blow by blow, but this was an actual extraordinary moment in General Witchfinder's...
history.
Kind of history, which I very much doubt will ever replicate. I've written... One of the teenagers, in inverted commas, who he's looking at on the train, that's Rowan Gotobed. I taught him.
Really?
Yes!
Wow! Okay.
I spotted him straight away. He's the guy in front, if you watch it again, he's the guy with the curly hair in front.
Okay.
He is, I should point him out and I should big him up because he's a top lad. I say young Rowan Gotobed, he's in his mid-20s now. Mm. But he was the young Sirius Black.
Okay.
In the Harry Potter movies. That was his big thing. And, you know, it was really funny because in true schoolboy way, all his contemporaries used to give him loads of shit about it.
Yeah.
And we're like, are you in Hufflepuff now? And things like that. But then when they got into sixth form, they're like, oh, you see, he's brought himself a brand new car with all the money that he's made. I was like, you go, Rowan. Well done, mate. So they all stop there when they realise how much money he's made out of showbiz already.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's a proper actor. And the other thing that people in this country might remember him for, he was in the Soft Mints ad where he went, Dad, I've got something to tell you. I like soft mints. And is that, it was very kind of Mighty Boosh-esque.
Right.
His dad turned around and went, no! And he's got a head that's like an extra strong mint.
Right.
Let me see if I can find it.
I'll take your word for it. There is a gap in British culture when I went away.
Mm. This was very recently, Ross.
Oh, I don't watch television with adverts. I'm a TV snob. I only stream stuff.
Right, okay. There he is.
Dad?
Yes, sir?
I know we've always been an extra strong mint family, but...
Yes, we are. Proper mints for proper people.
Yes.
There he is. Oh, yes.
Maybe there are other mints.
I recognise him.
Ah. Dad, I like soft mints. And they like me back in a way strong mints never could.
No!
Yeah, very Boucher-esque.
That, yeah, right. That ad. Yeah. That ad, people. So that's my man. That's Rowan. He's a super nice lad. And he's that. And so it was really weird because as I was watching it, as Ross says, it starts off with Sam Harris, who we'll talk about more here in a second, who plays the character of Philip. And he's sat, as Ross says, a very strong pedo vibe to him, sat on the train. And he's watching one of we see that there's a group of teenage boys. And as someone that has to teach teenage boys a lot, my ear is always sharpened for, is that accurate or not? Mm. And one of the first things I thought is, well, it's not that accurate because none of them have got mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of it. But then I suddenly realised this film is purposefully, you don't quite know when it's set.
Exactly, yeah.
Like both the police car that you see is, you know, doesn't seem to come from any, you know, it's very generic.
Yeah.
The train that he arrives on is one of the old slam door trains that they don't have anymore and things like that. So I thought, oh, okay, maybe this is supposed to be sort of like the late 80s or, you know, the 80s or something like that. So I thought, oh, yeah, you know, but that's not bad. That's kind of... And then as they get up and walk past, I thought, that's Rowan. Mm-hmm. I know him. I actually taught him. So there you go. That's my big thing that I had to... I said, I've got to talk about this. I actually know someone in one of the films we've covered. I doubt that's ever going to happen again.
No. Well, who knows? You never know.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So he approaches that boy, and then later on through the film, there's TV reports that a boy has gone missing.
Well, missing.
Yeah. Mm. And you're kind of like, well, has he got something to do with it or not?
Yes.
This guy is also carrying around a very nice leather holder, which I was coveting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. Yeah.
But we keep sort of like seeing glimpses of something coming out of that bag.
Of what's inside.
Yeah.
It's got huge, terrifying, spidery-like legs.
Yeah. And there's just very small glimpses. And I think it was most effective when they weren't shown what's not in it, but it was like slowly drawing out what was in that bag. They also kept showing, okay, if John was here, he'd be taking the piss because probably all the stuff I'm confused by was probably really obvious. But they keep showing, which looks to me like another time where he's taking that bag into the woods and placing it in the middle of a rhododendron sort of tree.
Yes. Yeah, a load of branches, yes.
And he's opening it up and there's something in there.
Yes.
That feels like that's a memory.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Now, this is, and I think this will be sort of, this will make up the bulk of the episode.
Yeah.
I know I always bang on, and I'm sorry,
to both of our listeners. I'm always banging on about the lighthouse and how much I love the lighthouse. Mm-hmm. But in many ways, to me, it felt like a thematic cousin to the movie The Lighthouse. In the fact that when you watch that movie, that's all about sanity and insanity. Mm. And they play with that notion of it's only two people. You're on this, you know, again, you know, you're miles away from, you know, there's not many, many other people around or in the story at all. So there's that aspect to it. And then as the story develops, The Lighthouse, it's that thing of, well, has he gone mad? And has Robert Pattinson's character, Winslow, has he gone absolutely insane? And as I was watching this, I was like, wait a minute. How much of this is actually happening?
Yeah.
And how much of it is in his head remembering the past?
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
Because the house that he turns up in at the start, again, very, very folk horror. Mm. It looks abandoned.
And overgrown.
Well done. All the way through, my one note is well done, whoever the location sort of scout was for this. All the locations were amazing.
Yeah, where do you find a house which has been overgrown like that, but they're going to let you go in there and film? It did have that problem I always have in horror films where if there's a disaster happening in a house, so it looks like this house had a firing at some point. It always seems that people just leave what furniture's in there. It never gets broken into. It's always just left like that, so people can go back and just see how it was after that disaster has happened. But it did give me kind of Hellraiser-y vibes, that house.
Yes, and I was very much so, Ross. Very much so. Yeah. Yep.
So it was good because you don't often see for British people. I don't think you don't often see realistic depictions of like suburban.
Houses.
It gave me like horrible memories of growing up in the 80s and stuff. It's like that house is. I've been in houses like that, where the window frames don't quite fit properly. The windows are too thin. It's going to be really drafty. And also when they went to like the barracks and things like that, I was like, been to community centres and looked just like
abandoned.
That. I've hung around on in old abandoned bloody garages and stuff. It
was fantastic.
Real. Yeah.
And that's what I put. There's a magnificent feel to this film.
Yeah.
That all the abandoned houses and the abandoned locations are perfect.
Yeah. There was one bit where there's all of these abandoned garages just all bashed up. And I was thinking, surely he didn't write that and then someone went and found it. They must have found it and then.
They must have and gone, hey, that will work nicely for the scene there. So that's right. So that's terrific. So all the way through, as I was watching it, I was like, am I really seeing what is really happening in inverted commas? Because one of the things of the film, without a doubt, is that Philip, who's the main protagonist of the film, he's constantly trying to throw away this thing, the possum.
Yeah.
And every time he throws it away, he wakes up and it's back.
Yeah.
And it's there.
Whatever it is, you keep seeing a bit more of it, but it's always coming back. He tries to burn it. He chucks it in the water.
Yeah.
And it also appears that when he tries... If he tries to abandon it, he can't get away with it without falling down, being sick,
So as we kind of mentioned at the start, there's an obvious kind of metaphor there for some kind of past trauma.
Very obvious.
It's a trauma for past metaphor. And then the other factor into it is that so when he goes into this house, this abandoned house at the start, it very much appears as if he's on his own.
Mm.
However, a scene later on, we're introduced to, as we said, Alan Armstrong, who's Morris.
Mm.
And again, very strong pedo, very strong creepy vibes to him.
Yeah.
Who's always like, tell me what happened.
Yeah.
Tell me what happened with you and the fox. And he's constantly trying to give him these green things. He's like, do you want one?
Mm.
And he's like, no. And he's like, oh. Kind of.
Asking if he's going to go in the room. Are you going in?
Yes.
There's one room he doesn't go into.
Yes. Downstairs in the house, he will not go into and he's like, no, I'm not ready to go in there yet. So there's all of this. So as I was watching it, I thought it would. You then also see as he every now and then he sees a television and they're reporting on this missing boy, the boy who we saw on the train at the start. He was doing sketches and drawings like he had done when he was younger. He's gone missing too. And the feeling that comes across is you feel that he's murdered him or, you know, in the thrall of the possum, he's killed him. I thought at one point it was going to be that the actual possum itself was this was made really macabre.
Yeah.
Was going to be like bodily parts of people that he's killed.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that dark.
And it was something which was getting on my nerves a bit when I was watching it, where what would kind of be like, you would go through aspects of him opening the bag and a little bit of the thing comes out. There'd be a discussion with Morris. Then there would be something, him going and doing something. And then it would almost like loop back. And then you'll have the same thing, but a little bit more. And it just kept doing that over and over again. But again, each time you find a bit more. But then I was like, I just read, it talks about Freud's fear of the uncanny. And I was reading about that before you came on. And one of the things he talks about is repetition. And, you know, that whole thing of things repeating over and over again. But so you feel like things are repeating, but then also you feel like they're not the same. And
yes,
and I can see that's knowing that's what he was trying to achieve. Actually, it feels more valid to me. Whereas to me, it was like as a viewer watching it was like you're trying to make this film last half an hour longer.
Yes,
get it to a feature length because
it was.
It was almost like I'm ahead of you now. You don't need to just do another little bit of reveal.
Yeah. I do concur. Does feel a little overlong. I do feel right. It would be like the most perfect 1 hour thing.
Yes.
You can imagine. But at the same time, the whole German expressionism thing and him being influenced by that. Yeah, you know, you can absolutely pick up on those vibes.
And if you got bored, the music's amazing. So that.
And there's that. And it is absolutely worth watching, if nothing else, for, I said, Philip, who is Sean Harris, is absolutely brilliant. It's a really fantastic performance. And he's someone for whom I find him like a really intriguing actor, in that he always looks like he's on the edges of madness the whole time.
Yes.
And he's someone, he was like really underused as the bad guy in one of the Mission Impossible movies he was in. But then rather than kind of like your traditional, okay, go and be in blockbusters and go kind of, he's done some other really interesting things. He was King Arthur in The Green Knight.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right. And I really loved I'm one of the few people that I really loved The Green Knight. I was down with that 100. And I thought his King Arthur was like the older, kind of like world weary King Arthur was fantastic. And then when I saw him in this, I thought, oh man, he's so good. And he really does walk that fine line between, first of all, you think he's a bit creepy, a bit pedo, but then also as well, like I said, like the scene, as Ross mentions, when he tries to get away from the possum and he collapses, like how he does like the collapse and then, you know, waking up from the clap. I thought he was great.
Yeah, I was thinking, oh, some actors have to do some rolling around in the mud, jumping in the water and stuff. I know, but I was just thinking, oh, fucking hell. You know, you must be thinking sometimes, is this what I'm really doing for a job? Especially like just running around abandoned fucking buildings and hiding. But one of the things I thought was great with that, because this is a spoilerific podcast.
Yeah, go on, go for it. Always is.
Yeah, so the thing in the bag is, I never realized it was a puppet. He says it's a puppet, but I didn't.
Ross missed it.
I missed that he was a puppet performer. So anyway, it looks like a Geiger-esque sort of body made of rubber. Well,
it's the body of a spider.
Yeah.
It's like a giant oversized spider, but with a human head.
Yes. But the human head looks very much like him.
His face.
He becomes more like it as the film goes on. He gets paler. And I was thinking that they must be spraying him with glycerin all between every take, because he's getting sweatier and sweatier. Both these people, all the people in this film look disgusting, and you wouldn't want to be near any of them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially that's what happens.
Well, at the end, we need to point out that the resolution to all this is that you find out that the room that he refuses to go into in this house is the room where his parents died.
Yeah.
And they died in a fire.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's been some sort of unresolved trauma there. And you then get the feeling that he was then either he was raised by, Morris. You know, kind of by Morris, who abused him.
Yes, who he calls him Uncle Mark. But what I've read, they called him his stepfather. I was thinking, well, I don't think he was.
What? No.
No. Anyway.
I didn't get that.
Yeah.
But, and so Morris, in the one scene that really did make me jump.
Well, when he jumps in with the hood on. Yeah.
Shit myself. Yeah. Just because it wasn't really a jump scare movie. It was a unsettle you movie.
Yeah.
So the fact that they suddenly throw this jump scare in, I did go like that. But yeah, yes, Morris jumps him when he goes into this room. And we basically learn that he used to abuse him when he was a kid. And there's a really awful scene where he sticks his fingers into his mouth.
Yeah, and I think the spider legs are his fingers, I think.
Yes.
Yeah,
very much so. They fight. And he manages to overpower and kill Morris. And in the corner of the room, there is a big kind of cabinet, which is in many ways very similar to the bag that Possum's in.
Yeah.
And it's rattling around, and he kind of throws it. Philip breaks it open, and the missing teenage boy's in there, who kind of, he doesn't say anything to him.
No, he just runs off.
He just looks at him and runs away.
Yeah.
And then we kind of see him in the, we see Philip in the garden at the end, kind of looking at the burnt out possum.
Yeah.
So whether anything will come of this, and then, you know, did any of it happen? Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. So it's like, did he actually abduct the teenage boy, and was Morris all in his
head all along? Yeah.
All in his head. And he just let the teenage boy go at the end.
Yeah.
So I thought that's one way of reading the film. Or that is actually what happened, that Morris abducted him and then he's released him at the end. Either way,
in his head when he was on the train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's numerous different readings you can kind of put into it there.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's essentially it, really. I think it is one of... It's difficult because sometimes when we're doing films for this, I feel like... Actually, you think to yourself, well, the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, the better I like it. But then after you think, but would I have ever thought about that again if I didn't have to do a podcast about it? And would I have turned this off when I was watching if I wasn't doing a podcast about it? As what often happens with doing these podcasts, my score has gone up.
Yes.
Having talked to you about it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, but this is going to be it's going to be a short podcast because it is essentially an exercise in tone and atmosphere. This film, there's no plot really.
We've summarised it pretty quickly, you know.
But I would recommend if you want something like this, someone being haunted by a traumatic event in the past, and you're a slow reveal of what that actually was. I'd recommend that. That Jeremy Dyson novel, which I talked about in the past. What Happens Now?
What Happens Now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, for me, that was a more, even though it's a book, not a film, I think it was a more successful, more successful version of that kind of idea. And it's a shame it looks like this guy hasn't written any films since. It looks like he's...
He takes his time, Matthew Holness, I think is... Well, because what he's done, and I've got one of these pre-ordered from The Simpsons Voice, he has done a Garth Marenghi book that's coming out for Christmas. Mm. So he's obviously done the director and then been working on, which he's written in character as Garth Marenghi.
Yeah.
And they did a thing. So he tweeted a thing saying... If you get it from Forbidden Planet, I'm signing them all.
Oh, nice!
So I've got saved one of those coming from Forbidden Planet. I think that's what he's working on next at the moment. And I think he just kind of really takes his time and chooses his projects wisely.
He interestingly plays the dead father in the thing. Mitchell and Webb did after Peep Show.
Yes, that's right.
Is quite an. It's quite a dark thing that and where both those everyone has different memories of what that character is like, and I think David Mitchell's character's memory of him is actually quite horrific. And what is that program called?
Is it called Family? It's not Family, is it? Hold on, cut this bit out.
But it's quite good. I need to go back. Do you find, James, I will go and watch a few episodes of something, and then something will happen. I'll completely forget that I was watching it and enjoying it.
Mm.
And then So I forgot that I was watching that series and never went back to it.
It is back. It's cool. Back is the sitcom with Mitchell and Webb, yeah, where he appears as the father.
So. And you must remember to go back, yes, and watch that because I enjoyed that. Right, yeah. So James, would you recommend this film and what score would you
I would, in my very poncy, quasi-philosophical way, in the fact that, as I was watching it, I was like, this hasn't rocked my world. This isn't, oh my God, I need to go out and tell everybody to watch this. Mm. But when we consider Radiophonic Workshop soundtrack, the look of the film, the cinematography of the film, amazing. Sean Harris's performance, superb. And when we consider, you know, that's what the things that I like about folk horror is that whole notion of the horror, the past is buried beneath, you know, the horror is buried beneath you the whole time. Mm. I thought it really did use those horror movie tropes of, you know, the abandoned house or the dilapidated house, as you said, like the youth center, it was like a military barracks or whatever they wanted to call it, falling into disrepair.
The secret clearing in the woods.
All of that. So what I put at one point, I put woodlands and creepy suburbia.
Yeah.
So it is really, really in that sweet spot for folk horror. So if you're interested in folk horror, if you're interested in British folk horror, and if you want to see something, a very, you know, what I would describe as an ambitious film that was done on, you know, quite a low budget. Mm. And if you've got Amazon Prime as well, it's free. Mm. It's definitely worth watching. So it's a 3 out of 5 from me.
Well, free. Well, I'm going to give it a 3 as well.
Hey.
So, interesting. Needed to be 20 minutes shorter, in my opinion. Cool.
Fair enough.
Excellent. Well, that was
all right.
That was Possum. So it's my turn to choose our next folk and horror. I was battling, James. Mm. I was battling going something which is right, because I thought that was quite arty. Do I go something super mainstream, or do I go sort of general witchfinder, sort of middle of the road, or do I go obscure? So, I'm going to go down the middle. I'm going to go for Children of the Corn, the 1984 version, original.
Not the more modern version.
No, the 1984 version of Children of the Corn.
Right.
I was going to go Witches of Eastwick.
That's not really a horror film.
No, but it's in the list of folk horror films from that documentary.
Witches of Eastwick was.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway. Cool.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, until next time.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening to Folk and How. Hopefully, we'll be back with the regular podcast soon. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoyed this. And happy day.
Thanks for listening. Stay safe, everyone. Farewell.
Have been listening to the General Witchfinders present Folk in Hell, a spin-off podcast. Find more episodes of this and the main show wherever you get your podcasts. Visit generalwitchfinders.com for more details. Commune with us on Twitter at GeneralWitch1 and help support the show on Patreon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things.
Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.